It's time for another edition of Cultural Connections on Siren Radio, in which, for this particular episode, we have the wondrous world of an associate professor in media history and a level 2 undergraduate. All this and more coming up on Cultural Connections for Siren Radio immediately after a little touch of chaos. So it goes, which brings us neatly around to Associate Professor Christine Grandy. How are you, Christine?
I'm good.
Excellent. Great to hear. Welcome to Cultural Connections.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Let's have a little bit of background of your good self, because, of course, Associate Professor that's in media history, as I said, yep. Share with us. I mean, we're over 100 years, of course, since the British Broadcasting Company yep. started off in 2022, but there are other stations across the globe.
Yes. Well, so I am a Canadian, but I'm a historian of British history, so I'm a historian first, and yeah, I'm just marching through all types of media in the 20th and 21st century. So I started with popular film that British audiences saw, and then I've moved into television in the post-war period, and now I'm touching the internet.
It is trying to
think about that as a topic.
But as is often the case, complementarity, I think, is the word.
Yeah.
When people say, and we used to deliver this to journalism students, that we had a scenario where clearly when the press first got wind of this thing called radio, they were most perturbed by the whole system and indeed wished to actually reduce the area. But we see that work together. Mm. Likewise, when television emerged, radio hasn't gone away. These complementary things, I think, have shown us perhaps that there is an ongoing package for not just changing platforms, but also combining those platforms.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the internet kind of brings that all together. Mm. So, yeah.
Well, Generation Internet, that's an interesting one. I think we're actually up to Generation Alpha now, but that's even a little bit younger than our next guest, of course, who's a Level 2 student, Oliver Castle. Welcome to Cultural Connections, Oliver. How are you?
Yeah, hello. I'm very good. Thank you.
Excellent. So, Oliver, share with us. You're an undergraduate reading journalism at the University of Lincoln. What was it about Lincoln that drew you here?
Well, I really kind of captured by the Siren Radio. I wanted to get into kind of radio and podcasting kind of after uni. So, and that really kind of drew my attention to the uni. So, yeah.
Well, there we are. Fantastic stuff. And Oliver, share with us in terms of your origins. Whereabouts in the UK do you come from or further afield?
I come from just outside Lincoln, actually. I've got family kind of across Lincolnshire, and I've got family also in Newcastle and in Southampton. So I'm quite interested in country music. That's kind of the theme of the songs that I've chosen for today.
And that brings us neatly round, actually, to, well, first to do a bit of a back enhancement, because that first track that we heard, Crab Bucket by Chaos, Christine, that was your initial selection. Any particular rationale for that?
Well, I mean, it's a great song, but it's also a great video. So Chaos is a Trinidadian Canadian artist, and the video features him walking down the streets of Toronto, where I used to live right before I moved to the UK, but for 11 years. And it's just this wonderful video of him exploring all these iconic parts of Toronto. So I have like a deep nostalgia for that one.
I'm very impressed, Christine, that you actually, obviously as an authentic Canadian, have the pronunciation of Toronto as Toronto, not Toronto, which of course is often sort of via this side. So
yeah.
It's clearly sorted out on that basis. Excellent. Okay, on to Oliver and your choice. I hope this isn't a comment on the show, because we do work very hard on Siren to actually sort of work
no,
through this.
No, definitely not.
Eileen, which I think is her real name.
Yes, it
we're
is,
about
yep.
to hear. Share with us why Shania Twain.
I really like Shania Twain. Kind of, I like her combination between kind of rock and pop and country as well. She's kind of, because she kind of partnered up with Mutt Lange, who was her first partner, and he had kind of a rock background. And then that kind of really comes through in That Don't Impress Me Much, and it's something that we really like about it.
It was Jeff Mutt Lange, because if I remember it serves from that point of view. Okay, Shania Twain, That Don't Impress Me Much. They were pretty smart, but you've got being right down to an art. You think you're a genius, you drive me up the wall. You're a regular original, a know-it-all.
Okay, so you're a rocket scientist. That don't impress me much. So you got the brains, but have you got the touch? Now don't get me wrong, yeah, I think you're alright, but that won't keep me warm in the middle of the night. That don't impress me much. Uh-huh, yeah. I never knew a guy who carried a mirror in his pocket and a comb up his sleeve just in case, and all that extra old gel in your hair, I'd lock it, cause heaven forbid it should fall out of place. Oh, oh, you think you're special. Oh, oh, you think you're something else. Okay, so you're Brad Pitt. That don't impress me much. So you got the looks, but have you got the touch? Now don't get me wrong, that won't keep me warm in the middle of the night.
So you got a car. That don't impress me much. So you got the moves, but have you got the touch? Now don't get me wrong, yeah, I think you're alright. But that won't keep me warm in the middle of the night. That don't impress me much. Oh, no, you think you're cool, but have you got the touch? Now, now, don't get me wrong, yeah, I think you're alright. But that won't keep me warm on the long, cold, lonely nights. That don't impress me.
Tappingly wonderful, an adjectival phrase I never thought I'd be using, but I probably do when it comes to Shania Twain. You're listening to Cultural Connections on Siren Radio. Two fabulous folk in the studio, Professor Christine Grandy and Oliver Castle. Let's go on to our first topic, which is one that I came across in a little bit of scientific literature earlier, time famine, a phenomenon that was first coined in the 1990s, I believe, in terms of we have all this new technology, Christine. We have all these devices. That's about, I mean, you know, the paperless office, you know, we wear that, we email, it's all the pain to paper. And yet time, that most precious resource, we seem to have less and less of it. Is that something you engage with as a case of no, here at the University of Lincoln, everything proceeds very calmly?
I would love to say that. No, I mean, I feel the way that, you know, I mean, on my day-to-day, in terms of my working life, it's just sort of, you know, as soon as you open the email, like that could be sort of hours lost in terms of requests, things to do. So you kind of have to manage that, right? Mm-hmm. And sort of block out time to not engage with, I mean, the email is the big thing because it's just sort of requests.
Well,
and
again, that's fascinating because I recall Nicholas Negroponte, the author of Being Digital, he was looking to drive email into his Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, in the 1990s. So he would refuse to answer anything which wasn't sent to him via email to drive it on that basis. Now, as you've rightly said, we're talking about having to not just compartmentalize, but effectively have time blocked out. Mm-hmm. So you say, okay, and I have to say, yeah, an email drops in the inbox and I tend to respond. It's almost a kind of Pavlovian response that it's, whether it's a case of, can we have details about the assessment points on your modules? Can you do this? Can you actually, or student requests and so on. And it is quite fascinating. On average, 60, 70, et cetera. I think, is that same time? Oliver, as an undergraduate, who, again, you know, emails come through, that is this a case of, I mean, obviously working in the journalistic profession, there's a lot of stuff that comes through in the electronic room. Do you feel as though you're suffering from time famine?
Well, I think you definitely have to watch kind of how many emails you get, because particularly with the Siren News emails, which we do, you get sometimes get tons and tons. A lot, often a lot of them aren't relevant and you can just kind of filter them out, which is helpful and it gets them down. But sometimes there's quite a few things you've got to respond to. And I think you just have to kind of like allocate out time to do these things. Otherwise, you just don't get them done.
As a journalist, clearly looking for stories, it's an intrinsic part, despite the bad press, no pun intended, that sometimes the journalism profession actually gets. You still, if you're true to the notion of being an investigative journalist or actually looking for those stories, you need to respond, or ideally should respond, as opposed to engaging in churnalism, which I'm sure you're aware of, where you simply say, well, that's a nice press release, I'll just cut and paste that into the system. In terms of that ethical approach to stories, etc., what attracted you to journalism again as a student?
Well, I like kind of telling stories and also holding power to account. So if you've got kind of issues that are going on that nobody's doing anything about or people feel ignored, I like to be able to explore that and expose that, which is kind of what really motivated me into journalism.
Speak truth to power, a phrase which has been used in everything from the McCarthy trials of Ed Murrow in the 1950s right the way through to arguably the spotlight scandals of Boston in the in the sort of early 2000s. From your media history perspective, Christine, is that something where there is an ideal in which the role of the fourth estate is critical. And obviously, of all the media histories, it's print that kind of goes back. Well, no, actually, oral history, probably, if you want to go all the way back to the notion of how we communicated and rhetoric and so on. But print has a substantive routine. The role of the journalist, as Oliver said, that speak truth unto power, is that something which you've found actually at its best, doesn't matter what country that we're dealing with, that is an essential part?
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the way that journalism is able to kind of bring to a much wider public scandals or urgent matters that have been overlooked, and the way that journalists take the time to sort of gather resources, gather legitimate sources, and present this in sort of a digestible way to people. In a lot of ways, you know, historians can take a lot of pages from journalism, no pun intended, just because our writing can sometimes be overladen with the details. Mm. And journalism, the way that they think of the audience sort of first and foremost is what makes them, I think, so powerful.
And there is, of course, the argument that journalists write the first draft of history. But actually, what goes out there?
Yeah.
You know, whether it's the Lincolnshire Echo writing about crisis in the farming community with too many wind farms or solar panels going through, or universities, no names obviously, having challenges with respect to their particular finances. You know, they look for the headline, but you've also raised a very important point there. Getting different sources, getting at least two verifiable sources to actually ensure that you're not simply producing fiction or faction, to say today. Which, again, I've got to ask this question inevitably. I'll go to Oliver from this perspective. ChatGPT and artificial intelligence, do you feel as though that can be an asset, or is it a case of destroy the computer, destroy it now?
I think there's benefits and weaknesses, because obviously I think the weaknesses are people say, using AI will give you people more time to focus on their stories, but actually they'll just sack people off and just get AI to do it for them. But on the kind of positive side, it's good for research. It finds things quickly. You can see where it's come from. Obviously, you can't use it as face value, but if you're just trying to trawl the internet for ideas and sources, it's a great asset in that respect. So it can be a good research tool, but I think in terms of doing a journalist's job, it's nowhere. It definitely can't do that at this point. It's just not there yet.
I'll just confirm once again for the benefit of the listener that as far as I'm aware, neither Christine, Oliver nor myself are indeed artificial intelligence-based forms at present. It's just a form. But Christine, technological determinism, which I suppose is again a whole other area, and how the technology impacts, as you said, you're starting to cover the internet, the line with respect to that. We've had other areas and issues from, you know, television, from radio and so on. Is this something where you've got a mixture of things here? Because on the one hand, if it's a commercial product, that's part and parcel of the whole thing intrinsically. You're looking to, in the words of commercial radio, not necessarily focus on the content, but to deliver audiences to advertisers. And you know, something like that, when you are looking at numbers and solely numbers, can be quite soul-destroying in terms of creativity. So, which is arguably why the model, the Reithian model, admittedly, and again, he has one or two sort of issues as well, but that Reithian model of inform, educate and entertain. Fun fact, as I frequently said, Siren Radio's budget to launch back in 2007, £60,000, exactly the same cost as the BBC used in 1922. Obviously, wow. You know, inflation changes, but yeah. An interesting line there. How do you view these changes where, you know, we're still using it here. We are streaming. We are engaging. We have a website. We have digital platforms. We're making use of all of those things at Siren Radio. And yet, there's something quite magical about sitting in a studio producing a show, admittedly as live, but even when we're doing the shows live, when Oliver reads the news, when we do the various other aspects within that, that, you know, it has that special, to say je ne sais quoi, but the sort of buzz, the frisson of excitement of doing a live performance and knowing that your words are effectively going from your mouth to God's ears, basically.
Yeah. Well, I think like a lot of the appeal of sort of social media platforms was that same sort of having that kind of je ne sais quoi in your pocket, literally after the iPhone comes out in 2007. So just that sort of the possibility of broadcasting live through things like Facebook initially, and then, you know, Instagram.
At least we
Twitter.
Won't be saying, if you like this, please like and subscribe and click the bell now.
It's... Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think like everything that has come with the digital has been echoes of the past, of historic media before it, but now just sort of constantly sort of available and sort of produced by ordinary people in ways that are a little bit easier. Like you don't necessarily need a radio station to sort of get your message out there, but it's not the same. You're absolutely right. It's absolutely not the same.
And it's partly the authenticity, because mm-hmm. I've noticed that there are an awful lot of podcasts, broadcasters, influencers, whatever they line through, who, if they have, for instance, a newspaper column, they're now in the Mail, Sarah Vine has started off her own podcast. Yeah, not necessarily the most most edifying podcast.
Oh, do we and we need never that?
Well, I'm trying to cover all balances here.
Yep.
But the key thing is whether the Guardian, the Observer, and so on, Companion, they are companions. They're not mutually exclusive.
Yep.
And again, perhaps it's also to do with that authenticity. And Oliver, back to yourself again, having that authenticity in terms of news sources, in terms of who you listen to, who you watch, who you read. Do you think that's important in the 21st century, or is it a case of, no, just use the echo chamber, just have your own views magnified back to you, like Nigel Farage?
No, I think it's really important to have kind of your own voice, and then people to have kind of differences and kind of unique platforms, whether it be podcast, radio, TV, online, etc. Mm. I think it gives people choice, it gives them variety, and it has more impact. Mm. If it's just an echo of what somebody else has done or copying, like journalism, for example, it just doesn't have the same effect and people will just switch off. I just think you need it to be unique, you need it to be original for it to have an impact.
Mm. W.T. Stead. A gentleman who obviously goes back, I often refer to W.T. Stead as the Rupert Murdoch of the Victorian era. I'm sure you can allude to that. Reason I'm mentioning his name? Well, of course, he went down on the Titanic,
yeah.
Which ties in neatly with, of course, your next piece of music. Would you like to just share with us why another Canadian has emerged from the Christine Grandy collection to actually be featured on Cultural Connections?
I mean, it was difficult to choose amongst many, many fellow countrymen, but I think Celine Dion might be our biggest and most famous
and
export.
Not William Shatner.
I'm going to argue for Celine, you know? I mean, he's amazing.
TJ Hooker,
but maybe a
Boston
bit
Legal.
I know, Star Trek, obviously. Yeah. But Celine, I think she transcends almost all boundaries.
Beyond Bryan Adams, even.
I did think about Bryan Adams, but he also has, you know, there was a funny, like his popularity, he was so popular in, I think, the 90s, that people were like, oh, this isn't Canadian.
Yeah.
Like, there was a whole kerfuffle in Canada.
Robin Hood, Prince
that.
Of Thieves, sadly, the soundtrack, it was a mixed blessing. On the one hand, great, number one for so long. On the other hand, terrible, number
so
one for so long.
So many weddings, including my uncle's. But yeah, Celine Dion, and I think something about her, like, her authenticity and the way that she sort of connects with people, and then also, you know, her... Quebecois background, like I think she's sort of this ambassador for Canada in ways that are fairly hard to stack up against most people.
Go on. one time and last for a lifetime and never let go till we're gone. Love was when I loved you one true time. I hold you in my life, will always go on. Near, far, wherever you are, I believe that the heart does go on.
After much research in the midst of Celine Dion singing My Heart Will Go On, Christine has finally confirmed that she did indeed represent Switzerland in the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
1988.
So there you go. Who would have thought she'd continue in her own magical way? Okay. obviously, she had confidence in herself, and rightly so. Music is a unifying power. Let's bring Oliver in on this particular thing. I mean, I'm interested, Oliver, in your selections. I say country music themed on that sort of basis, and I'm using country because country and western is so 20th century. The and western was dropped a number of times ago. We're not talking about a genre which insists on playing Hawaiian guitars. Obviously, some Hawaiian guitars emerge in some country music format, but there is a vast range of it. Do you feel sometimes that you're flying the flag for country music, that you sort of think, because there are a number of journalists and undergraduates, now graduates, who also shared your country love for country music. In fact, Sound and Country Vision was a program that used to be developed by Tessa Snart from this and this on Siren Radio. So what is it about country music in particular? I mean, is it living in Lincolnshire that you think, yeah, you know?
I think it's more kind of the diverse range of kind of genres, because they often, it's so versatile, you can combine it with any other genre, be it that pop, rock, or jazz or anything. You can literally you can combine it as a style, and because it's so versatile, it makes it so kind of nice to listen to. And although it's kind of more of a 20th century kind of origins, we've even got with like Noah Kahan and Stick Season, new song out now, which is kind of country, it's still coming back. And so you can kind of see it's kind of a trend that's going to keep coming back, and that's what I like about it.
There's also a substantive country music scene in Italy, which I was quite surprised at, and then the sort of Euro country scene from there. Ireland, obviously, very popular.
Yeah. And Canada and America.
Exactly. So, I mean, from your own perspective, Christine, country music, is it something which in Toronto, you find, is there always a case of, no, there are the city folk, and then there's the other folk?
Well, yeah, I grew up in a town called Red Deer, Alberta. So Toronto was sort of like my graduate school life. But Alberta is kind of like, it's like the Texas of Canada. It's like oil fields and cattle and a lot of cowboys.
Calgary Stampede.
So Red Deer is like an hour north of Calgary. So I grew up with a lot of cowboys and hockey players. And I was not.
And now you're teaching in a university, which
I know. I was not a cowboy. I was like, you know, I mean, this was the 90s. So I was wearing like grunge and listening to like Nirvana. So I had a view of cowboy culture as being
somewhat
not
retro.
Quite retro.
Possibly a little bit sexist.
Sexist, white, kind of, you know, really masculinist. Mm. Garth Brooks was really popular back then. Those shirts were horrifying.
So no Calamity Christine then?
There wasn't. But then at the same time, I definitely have, you know, arguably some cowboy vibes. So I can see the benefits of the cowboy culture, but I also grew up sort of steeped in it and saw some of the, maybe the not nice parts too.
And it has obviously, Oliver, changed in terms of the cliched view of country music that you would have seen, you know, the usual sort of almost male ego massage that comes across, and obviously the stand by your man scenario, etc., which I think hopefully we've perhaps moved on for, maybe not, some would actually say. So again, was it something that kind of you were into for a particularly young age, Oliver, or?
I think I got it as kind of interest as a teenager, and then I think more of the kind of not modern, but kind of 90s country music kind of onwards, it came more modern, and there's kind of more a lot more messages that were not less traditional. So with Shania Twain's Man, I Feel Like a Woman, there's feel like female empowerment, and then with modern songs, it's got a lot of kind of social issues that are kind of in that, which you didn't get with kind of older country music, which is more that kind of traditional masculine style. So I think country music has evolved over time, and then there's a lot more kind of diversity within singers and the messages that are kind of portrayed in it.
Much as we might love Jim Reeves singing Scarlet Ribbons, there comes a time where you have to say enough already. Darius Rucker, your next choice of music. Oliver, would you like to explain why?
Well, Darius Rucker, I like his kind of style. He's originally from South Carolina, and he talks a lot about that in his songs, and it's kind of a nice kind of summery song, and it's kind of branching onto kind of pop and country in a way, and that's kind of what I quite like about it.
Just wanna sit around and play. Gonna hit balls off the dock. Kick back in my flip-flops. Don't owe nothing to the lender. Nothing spinning in the blender. The only thing on my agenda is beers and sunshine. Bonfires in summertime. Back porch nights in South Carolina. Ain't nothing finer than me and my girls striking up a little. Turn on the good times, turn off the TV. Yeah, the only BS I need is beers and sunshine. Gonna call my girl and say, let's get our friends and hit the lake. Grab a boat and get to floating. A little buzzed and a little toasted. We're gonna hang and have a little fun now. Flying high like we'll never come down. We're gonna go until we run out. Our beers and sunshine. Our bonfires in summertime. Back porch nights in South Carolina. Ain't nothing finer than me and my girl stocking up a little lighter. Cause everybody's down here, we're going crazy. Don't know how to fix it, but I think maybe turn on the good times, turn off the TV. The only BS I need is beers and sunshine. Nights in South Carolina. Ain't nothing finer than me and my girl striking up a little lighter. Cause everybody's down and we're going crazy. Don't know how to fix it, but I think maybe turn on the good times, turn off the TV. Yeah, the only BS I need is beers and sunshine. Time.
in Ireland, February the 1st is officially the first day of spring. So there we are. But the whole notion of the spring season, and obviously Ash Wednesday around the corner, we have a whole range of preparations. We have 40 days, 46 days technically of Lent, if you include the Sundays from that point of view. What are our thoughts, Oliver, to start off with, as we head into, again, the time of the year? You know, back in the day, when I was Cambridge University at Radio, this term would have been the Lent term, okay, followed by Trinity, preceded by Michaelmas. I think they're slowly moving away from those situations. But what are your thoughts on that? Do you feel it's a natural factor of living in the Northern Hemisphere? It's global north, it's the way the seasons go. Don't blame us, blame our great-great-great-grandparents.
Well, I think most of us kind of still stick to those traditions of like Christmas and Lent and Rose Tuesday and those sort of things, even though kind of we may not necessarily kind of consider the meanings in the way that they did back then. I think they're still kind of part of an everyday kind of culture, and I think they're still kind of respected, yeah.
And of course, Shrove Tuesday, shriven of our sins and such like, from a media's perspective, or media history perspective, or historical perspective, you know, are there areas there which you think, yeah, actually, if we're looking at, for instance, print or media and so on, sometimes being connected with a religious format, be that Islam, be that Christianity, be that, you know, the culture's religion itself, the binding together of people, it actually kind of makes sense on one level. On the other hand, you think, yeah, but there are disconnects. And clearly, at the other extreme, there are huge issues, as we're seeing tragically today in parts of the world, where people will literally start killing people just on the basis of their belief systems.
Mm. Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, journalism, the way that journalism has often functioned is quite as secular, right? That it's not kind of tied to...
And I think it has to be, really. I mean, obviously, yeah. there are journalistic outlets which are specifically tied into specific religious formats, mm-hmm. and so on, whether we're talking about Jewish chronicles or Christian publications or indeed Islamic publications and so on. But I think probably for credibility reasons, you do need to have that neutrality. Otherwise, if you cease to be neutral and cease to be objective, then possibly your message is not necessarily as strong as it would be if it was an objective message.
I think that's the case. And to be honest, when I moved over here from Canada, like Lent is not really sort of a thing in most parts of Canada. So like I kind of had to educate myself about like Shrove Tuesday and stuff like that.
Pancakes, like all of those sort of issues.
Yeah, honestly, I had no...
Making use of all those eggs and things that you needed to use for overnight. Yes.
Yeah, and you know, I grew up like sort of, you know, in the Christian tradition, but not very much so. So I was surprised by how what a common framework of knowledge it was over here.
I mean, the interesting thing, obviously, we are in a university which is at the base of a hill, at the top of which is one of the most, well, for once, it used to be, I think, the highest standing building ever with the spire, etc., that was actually there. So I think inevitably there is a connection within that. The fact that Oliver will be graduating in the cathedral is a big selling point of the whole system. So it's interesting just how that sort of develops within the spring. What about rebirth? I mean, let's take the religious aspect. What about spring as a series of rebirth? Surely we talked about the Calgary Stampede, which again, I can appreciate it has to be seen or to be experienced. But is that something where, you know, I'm thinking of the Native Americans here. I'm thinking about the areas that in so many ways perhaps we've lost that connection with the planet, with the environment and so on. Is that something which echoes and maybe in its own way, although it's not traditionally a religious, quote unquote, certainly is spiritual?
Absolutely. I mean, spring is kind of, I mean, particularly in Canada, and obviously it depends what part of Canada you're in, but it's a long, hard winter in a lot of places. And it's just, you know, it's cold, it's dark, the grass has all died, there's nothing green. And the first sort of shoots of spring, you know, usually around March, things start kind of thawing out and it feels like you can go outside without like a car or pocket heaters. Yeah. That does feel like, I mean, the way that people's spirits lift and like sort of, you know, much more sort of community activity occurs. In those times of year. Whereas here, I mean, I feel like it's just perpetually springtime, like starting in January. I love it. It's like my favorite time of year in England where things just start blooming, and such a huge array of things start blooming from January. As soon as the light comes back, it happens here.
Yeah, the constant renewal of life and hope, perhaps, which is critical. Okay, 1969, you might have said, where's the hope there when you actually got Vietnam taking place? And of course, you have humanity on the moon, which you may return to in the not-too-distant future if we don't crash the ships into the asteroid first. Summer of 69, Brian Adams clearly writing from a nostalgic perspective here of all his lines, another Canadian, and it's a substitute for Spirit of the West's Home for a Rest. Christine, would you like to explain what the... I mean, because I have a loose connection with Brian Adams insofar as an actress who was actually in his very first video, Lisette Anthony, went on to do various aspects in the industry and also work with a whole range of things. But she said she got this gig with a Canadian singer called Brian Adams. I said, oh, that's all right. This was in the 80s. By the time Summer of 69 actually hit, clearly things were really motoring on from that. What is it that appeals about Brian Adams to yourself? Or is it a case of, he's Australian, for goodness sake?
Yeah, I mean...
He's Canadian. Australian?
Yeah, he's an Ontario boy.
Yes.
I mean, he's kind of... I mean, I think, really, I mean, Summer of 69, I think it actually came out in 85, and it's just like a really banging song, you know? Like, it's just a really good song. It's hard to argue with it. But it was so good. And I mean, it's at the point where like cassette tapes were dominating, and it just seemed like, you know.
You like even probably had 8-track cartridges being featured in.
Yeah, absolutely. But like MTV was sort of on the scene. It felt like being a rock star was like a completely different thing in the mid 80s to what it was previously. And to see a Canadian sort of rise to those heights. I mean, it caused a lot of discomfort in Canada, where people thought this wasn't the Canadian thing to do. And it was a kind of success associated with our very powerful southern neighbor, the United States.
It's tough having those people behind the border. You could build a wall, I suppose. I mean, that might be considered
by
an incoming president.
You know,
president.
It's a pretty big shadow. It's a pretty big shadow. But then, you know... I think he just kind of went on to success and really, I think, paved the way for like kind of modern celebrity for a lot of Canadians,
In much the same way as your good self, Christine, you can transcend the boundaries and borders of nationalism.
Yeah.
I got my first real six string, boy, it at the five and dime, played it till my fingers bled.
It was indeed the summer of 69. Excellent. Well, I remember it, but Oliver, no, I don't think Christine either probably remember it. Vaguely remember it. So it goes. Siren Radio's Cultural Connections. Two fabulous folk in the studio, as mentioned, Professor Christine Grandy and, of course, Oliver Castle. The next feature is a standard one. It's one of those areas that we constantly sort of are sometimes surprised by the responses and so on. I'm always fascinated to hear what aspect of Lincoln our co-hosts have found either unusual, charming, or completely incomprehensible since coming to the university. Let's go to Christine first.
Oh, things I find charming. I mean, there's quite a bit I find charming about Lincoln.
Or indeed the British culture per se.
Yeah, I have to say, I really like Brayford Wharf and like the swan scene and that they like actually nest in the...
And they after are royal the birds, leave. Of course.
Yeah. And then like, I had my daughter in Lincoln 3 years ago at the hospital and I learned a new Lincoln word, which was Diddy, because she was tiny, she was a bit premature, and all the nurses were like, oh, she's just Diddy.
I thought that was a Liverpool word, actually, after Ken Dodd and the Diddy Men.
There has been some confusion, but, like, everyone was using the term.
Duck is very much Lincolnshire.
Yep.
Yellow belly, Lincolnshire. Diddy, I would have possibly said that's more kind of Liverpudlian.
It was all over the hospital.
Really?
Cultural contamination, possibly. What it meant. I knew it was positive, but then at a certain point.
Could have been an acronym, you know, for delightful, mm-hmm. intrusive, mm-hmm. you know, whatever from that first moment. Diddy.
Mm-hmm.
Oliver.
I think it's great to have... I think it's great to have a Lincoln Castle in Lincoln. It's so great, nice historical venue, and it's so much history that's steeped in Lincoln and things like that. And also, as Christine said as well, the Brayford as well, it's lovely having it by the uni and being able to see all the swans and stuff, and then and it being nice, all the kind of ripples of water and things like that. So those would be my two favourite things, yeah.
You see, for quirkiness, the thing that always has impressed me, and I'm sharing this for the first time really on Siren Radio, is the fact that I think we are globally the only university that actually has a railway track running right the way through the middle of it, which, you know, can have challenges if you actually choose to actually go between buildings at a time where, you know, the barriers are down, etc. But I just thought that was quite astounding. And also, given the location of Siren Radio and the University of Lincoln, back in the pre-97 period, was a toxic waste dump. Mm. So, I think that shows that things can be built, etc. And hopefully will continue. We've almost reached the end of Cultural Connections, astonishingly, for this particular edition, which I've thoroughly enjoyed. Christine, has it been okay for you?
Oh, it's been lovely. Absolutely lovely.
And Oliver?
It's been excellent.
This is good, sir. Ola normally is, he's here, he's done the photo opportunity, but he is doing what many of us do at the University of Lincoln, which is actually teach. And Ola obviously sort of benefits, hopefully, from some of that input as well from that point of view. Do you have your own show on Siren as yet, Oliver?
No, I don't, but I quite like going on to shows as well. I'm going on to the news extra show on Friday this week, and then come on to this one, and then I'll do the news stuff as well.
Fantastic.
So,
yeah. We must join us on a midweek drive as well for that in the near future. And likewise, of course, you might develop and keep the country music flag flying and do a country-based program, which would be great. Okay, Dolly Parton. Mm. Not Christine's selection, even though you might have thought, well, you're obviously working
nine
to five, though, let's face it, Christine, in academia. how short a day is that? You know, I mean, if she'd said like 2 a.m. through to, you know, 24/7, basically, maybe you're talking about that. But and obviously the child as well, all connecting on that basis. But Oliver, obviously, from Dollywood, the Parton, bless herself, any reasons for going out with 9 to 5?
Well, I think it's just kind of relevant to journalism as well, because like most journalists do not work 9 to 5. In fact, many do work through the night early or late shifts, and it can often change all the time. And it's also just kind of, I think it was kind of a message that things were changing in the 80s with kind of like, particularly towards women and the kind of pressures women have to face with their job and then coming home for the family and doing all those extra things that maybe the man didn't have to consider in the same way. And I just think it's an important message that we need to kind of consider.
And actually, together with Jane Fonda and other sort of folk, not a bad movie either, basically, on that sort of basis. It's part of the classic 80s. To Oliver Castle and to... I've got to say, Oliver... Oliver Castle and liking Lincoln Castle. Lovely connectivity there. Yeah. Very impressed. if it had been Oliver Cathedral, it would have been another line entirely. Oliver Castle, Level 2 undergraduate for the University of Lincoln Journalism Department, of course, and Christine Grandy, Professor of Media History. Huge thanks. And here's Dolly.
Stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping, with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Barely getting by, it's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind. Watch him shatter. You're just a step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. In the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in, and the tide's gonna turn and it's all gonna roll your way. Working 9 to 5.